Action Park Media. She got the paper.
All right, welcome to Victory, the podcast. I am Doug Ellen.
Kevin Connolly here, sitting in for Kevin Connolly and Kevin Dillon. That didn't make any sense. That's not what I meant.
We're going to have a guest.
Dillon's not here, but we got a good guest.
We got a guest, but we also have to say there's one guy who's like, you know, like calls me like a narcissist because I talked that my son was on the show a lot. So
son was a major part of the show.
I mean, he's a major part of my life, weirdly enough, you know. So, and I like that he's
but
on.
But separating the two, Lucas Ellen was Jonah Gold.
Yeah. He was Jonah Gold.
He's Jonah Gold.
And he might be in the
His
reboot.
His resume speaks for itself.
He might
he
be
was
in the reboot.
Four seasons and the movie.
He might take over for Ari Gold, the reboot. And, you know, we'll talk about it, but, you know, the same way this podcast happened is the way the show happened. Luke was on the set, and everybody just thought he was funny and cute, and they said he should play Ari's son. And there was no gift. Just like today, you said, I didn't say, hey, you know, you want to put Luke on the podcast? You said, I think it would be a great thing.
I think it's an interesting deep dive.
Yeah, yeah. So, but for the show, I put him in front of Sheila Jaffe, and I said, Sheila.
You made him read?
Yeah, but he didn't know. It wasn't like he was at home going, study. You better study that, you mutt.
Doug, you're the only person that I know you put yourself on tape, which is insane.
Yeah,
I mean, good for you.
I failed.
Two shows. You opted to not hire yourself.
Yeah, yeah. That's well, amazing. I'm not. I mean, by the way, just so we're clear, Lucas and myself had to be cleared by HBO, but I put myself on really for the pilot I did after. I mean, I have full tapes of myself. I had a couple of actors working
with me. Scotty, do you hear this? He's got audition tapes,
well,
and you like complain about content. Do you know what Scotty could do with that?
Like Sean Avery has audition tapes. But
Sean Avery is Sean Avery, and you're you, and I want to see your audition tape for your own show that you decided to not give yourself the role.
I could show you, but again, I want to be clear so I don't sound like... I couldn't just give myself the role. I would, if I decided, fuck you, I'm great at this, it would still have to go to HBO.
Cooler heads prevailed.
Yeah.
But if HBO said, Doug, we really don't think, you're like, well, it's just got to be me.
There's
you weren't
a chance
ready to pull a Stallone.
Like, I probably,
Rocky?
You know, which looking back at it now, because the 40 pilot, the part that I could not cast, which I had Michael Imperioli for, he's so good that he could have played either part.
And Rappaport.
Well, Rappaport's great too, but Michael read for two parts and he could have played either. He was amazing and I had a really hard time deciding which one. But the best part in that show, the best role, I could not find the right guy, and the guy that I cast, he just wasn't the right guy.
He just wasn't the guy.
He didn't mesh well.
It's like Eric Stoltz in Back to the Future.
Yeah, but I read for it 100 times now. So looking back, do I wish I like tried to jam it down HBO? Since the show didn't go anyway, I could have maybe either had a better chance.
And
or whatever.
Wasn't that sort of the when you guys started Entourage, that was like the number one rule? That no matter what, we all have friends, families, wives,
yes,
girlfriends, no matter what, everybody reads.
Everybody reads, no gifts. And, you know, obviously if they're a, you know, Adam Goldberg, whoever. I don't go,
Martin
hey.
Landau did not read.
Martin Landau did not audition. So, but I said, Sheila, not a single ounce of bias on this. We want the best person.
If you don't think he's the right kid,
yeah,
then he doesn't know. Like, yeah. It'll be fine. But yeah. I want to know that we're hiring the right kid, even
yes,
though it is my kid. And of course I want him to have the job.
Yes.
So, but in the preliminary conversations, does Melissa, mom, like, do you talk about, like,
oh, yeah,
potentially
we talked about all of that because, I mean, like, very clearly, neither of us wanted him to be a Hollywood actor.
Correct.
So this was more about, you know, spending time with me.
Quality time.
Coming to work. And fortunately, you know, the show obviously got really popular, but nobody his age watched it. So he wasn't like walking through elementary school and people were like, oh my God, you're on.
Wasn't really affecting his life.
Yeah. Really. What's that show? In fact, one time I remember, like, we went to Baskin Robbins and, you know, we were sitting there eating ice cream and this guy is like staring at him through the window and it was creeping me out. I'm like, why the fuck is this guy staring at my son? What is going on here? What is going on here? And like, the guy just keeps looking and looking. And finally, he like gets up and he comes over and he's like, hey, man, I'm a big fan. And I realized, oh, my God, I forgot. He's like on, you know,
that's,
he's on the show.
And he's here. Lucas, Ellen, welcome.
Wait, didn't even do our pre.
Let's do our pre. Luke, sit there. He's enjoying. He's comfortable. I just want to make sure he's comfortable. But he's comfortable.
We got to get Connolly like a light board that says we got 2 minutes left in this segment.
Oh, I'm recording, bro.
Okay, so.
Oh, segments.
Segments. Remember when we wanted to do segments? Remember we were going to do segments?
We're going to do a gambling segment soon.
All right. But we got things to talk about. But so that was one, you know, how we got the job, how I didn't get any acting jobs. I did actually, obviously, I did not read for the small parts I put myself on and on.
Right. Within reason.
So, you know, well,
obviously you could handle the guy like who's reading actors, right?
Who knows? Couldn't do that. Could we probably have found someone better? Probably. But did I dream that someone would see me and take me away from this miserable fucking life of writing and maybe put me on a show so I could do what you do?
Have you ever been recognized as an actor?
That was the best day of my life. Like, at
no,
Fred,
I'm talking about recognized. Like, oh, yes. Hey, you were an entourage.
Yes.
Oh, I thought the kid recognized Lucas. I thought the guy recognized Lucas.
He did. That was then. That guy didn't know me. He was staring at my 8-year old son.
Your 8-year old, right?
Yeah. So me, I walked to Fred Siegel, which is where we shot the opening scene of the pilot.
Right.
And like a bunch of girls walked out and they're like, "Oh my God, you were on Entourage last night." And I felt really good about
it. Did you like that?
I loved it.
How bad were you like, yeah, but you know what?
No.
Not only was I acting in it, but if you did a little deep dive on that, you'll see that I do a lot more.
Absolutely not. No, I was actually very excited to be recognized for my acting talents.
On-camera talents? And little did we know your vocal talents would later explode and be your main pipeline.
I wish somebody would have called. Like, they actually did call for Lucas. Like,
well, that's what I was going to say.
They didn't offer him something, but they called and said, "We really like him. Does he want to come read for this thing? If he gets it, he has to move to wherever." We were like, "No, he's if he wants to act, he can act at 18." So whatever. He didn't want to act. So, but me, I wanted to act since I started. That's where I started in this business. I wanted to be a comedian and an actor. And it just nobody wanted me. Just nobody cared about it. Like now, it's like they feel about my writing now. They used to not care about my acting. Now they don't care about my writing.
That's not true, bro.
Well, you care about my writing. Well, apparently your superstar Ari Gold doesn't care about my writing.
What's happening? You're right. He does. He's doing like videos.
I mean, I'm getting all these DMs. So I just want to address this. I want everyone to monetize, maximize their lives.
You're onto something. Monetize, maximize. I mean, we need a third or fourth M. A good saying.
Like
monetize.
I'm not Eminem, but right. Monetize, maximize.
Eminem would be still going right now.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's for it. 5 minutes. But so I keep getting DMs from people. Jeremy's, I don't know if it's for his podcast or what, he's taking calls as Ari Gold. Now, just to be clear, I own Ari Gold, along with HBO and Mark. I created Ari Gold. I begged Jeremy to do this show that he was reluctant to do.
Right.
I battled with Jeremy for the movie, which he didn't want to do. We, you know, everyone was always like, why'd the movie come out so late? Well, Jeremy was the reason it came out so late because he was on a show.
Right.
And he had moved on and honestly didn't want to talk about this show, didn't care about this show, nothing. But also, you know, you could grow your audience if that's good content.
Right.
But my... You know, as we're sitting here during a writer's strike, where I will make the very clear statement that script is not everything. The combination is everything. And there are certain actors that don't necessarily need a script, but there's like six of them, you know, in the world. And as you can see...
I would say that even that is inaccurate. You have to have a script.
But, you know, there was an article once that really talked about... There's some actors, even in terrible movies with terrible stories, they still stand out. Then there's other actors that you put them in terrible movies and terrible stories and they look like they can't act. You know, so there's some guys that just, even in a piece of shit, and I'm not, you know, saying who that is or who it isn't, but there was an article about it. Like Daniel Day-Lewis could be in, you know, in anything and look good, probably, you know, and come up with something. But my point is that...
Right, at some point, Daniel Day-Lewis is going to take over the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I mean, like, whatever you guys got going. And since I'm here, right.
Yeah. Oh, it's like watching the Celtics. Like, they don't look like anybody's coaching them, but at some point, Jason Tatum's going to score 50.
Right.
You know, but there's times because he doesn't seem to have a plan where he's going to have bad games, which seems to be what's happening. But anyway,
not anymore.
I really, anymore. Writing is so much, though. And, you know, 2 years before, or 2 years before any of you ever walked on a set and existed for this show, myself and others, you know, I had lots of friends who read these scripts over and all, and Lev and HBO.
It's like with a movie, like actors come in for a very small chunk of time. So if you're shooting 10 weeks, you came in a movie for 10 weeks, you're there for 10 weeks, and then you leave.
Yeah.
The director and or producer or writer or whatever has written and has been on it for years.
Yeah.
And then after you leave, they will spend an additional 6 months.
Yeah.
putting it all together, and then spend an additional. So just the overall time commitment,
and
which
let's
is
be
why
honest,
they're all crazy.
And we know the reality is the actors will get all the credit, which fine, whatever. It's great. But you know how easy for you. I mean, you can say and tell me if I'm wrong. Once you nail the character, I mean, it's pretty easy for you to show up and be E in season 6 of Entourage.
Season 6, it was like pretty much it does become instinctual.
Right.
Yes.
So for me, though, it's actually harder. Like for us in the writer's room to continue to come up with stories and to continue to come up with, everyone can debate whether we did or not, but original dialogue. And how does Ari say something obnoxious to Lloyd differently than he said it the last 450 fucking times? It was
well,
a
that's
lot.
Sort of improv. Not saying that any of that was improv, but that's a little bit different with like buttons or zingers, but you got it. Starts with the script. I mean, everybody knows anything.
The buttons and zingers, there was almost no improv on this show. And those buttons and zingers took fucking hours of my life away from me.
And
when I say that I probably, my contention is that I probably worked 150 times more for time consumption than anybody else on this show. I may never do anything else again in my life, and that's fine, but I did do this. So when I see the character, which, you know, look, if you're doing a spoof, Saturday Night Live is free to go, here's Ari Gold.
Is it possible that it was a one-off? Are there multiple sessions of him making calls?
I don't know, but I don't like it. I don't like it one bit because the things I saw, they weren't funny and they almost
it's
like,
weird for you.
Well, it's not about weird. It denigrates the character and, you know, and Jeremy has done 50 movies. He can, you know, he can feel free to, you know, riff on any of them, but he can also just be Jeremy and be funny as Jeremy. And that's great. And, you know, like this platform
Let's
allowed him.
Let's get the backstory on these segments. I'll text him.
Yeah, ask him about the segments. He's also selling Ari Gold t-shirts, which is not his copyright.
Give us,
he's
give
not
us
allowed
some
to
context.
Do that. So, but, you know, like when you talk about writing, and I want to talk about that, the Succession finale was on, which I cannot believe you don't watch. It's just bizarre to me and embarrassing.
Well, no, here's the thing. This is why I've been hesitant to talk about it at all, because I would like to watch it. And I got hung up at the end of season 1, and now there's so much to catch up on.
Well, I won't give you any spoilers, and I find the show, so I want to say, like, anything I'm saying is not criticism. The show is over forever and ever and ever. And the creator of that show has made it very clear that, you know, he's not doing anything else.
It's just run its course.
Yeah, like, he's very, like, attached to keeping these people. But two things I want to say. The writing is fantastic. The storytelling is amazing. The acting is incredible. But what I want to say is, because it's so fucking obvious the way I watch it, every character on that show talks like Ari Gold. They literally, like, if you watch one episode, there will be 25 lines from every character that are as offensive as anything that are offensive. They don't offend me, but will offend somebody as much as anything that Ari would say. And the only thing I want to say about writing, which was the show is great, God bless them, but when they want to talk for whatever reason, they don't criticize that and they criticize us. For me, I tried. As a writer, one of the things that's so important to me, and it doesn't mean it took it away from Succession, but they don't do it well as far as I'm concerned. Everybody is interchangeable because everybody is saying things that sound alike. And what I always tell young writers about scripts, you want someone to be able to look at that script with no character names on the page and go, that's this guy. And it was really important to me. And I remember, I can think about the...
By the way, I would guess I could have done that with Entourage.
Yeah, and again, there's going to be some where like, yeah, maybe not. But if you look at the Entourage pilot, like there's lines in that show, like just whatever. Show me where Vince eats breakfast. Make out with me and I'll show you where Vince eats breakfast. There's no way he's saying that.
Right.
There's no way Vince is saying that, obviously. Right. You know, drama's not saying that about his brother like that, you know? So it's clearly a turtle line. And Ari's got clear lines in that. He's going to probably whine somewhere in the pilot.
He's going to complain about something.
You know,
sure.
Vince is never going to complain about anything. So I really do think you could take that pilot script and you could take off all the characters' names and almost every line you could probably identify who's talking.
Are you recommending Succession to me? Are you telling me?
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
And what is the general understanding of the finale? Are people happy or are the animals out for blood with the finale?
I didn't really say anything bad.
No,
saw
not
some,
you. Right.
I saw a couple of like modest things and then like I tweeted something like, you know.
But did you like the finale?
I loved it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but I tweeted that the Celtics Heat game was more shocking than the Succession finale because it was, because I'm shocked that the Heat won that game. I'm literally like stunned that the Celtics came back from 3-0 just to have that go down. So, but I didn't mean it as a criticism. Then I got a bunch of people going like, oh, can't people just, I loved it. I thought season four of Succession, and one of the interesting things, which I'm just throwing it out there because I'm saying it and whatever. It's not an angry thing. It's not a mean thing. But a lot of times when you think about the reboot, like how do you reinvent it? What do you do different? What's new? And I know like fans will go crazy, but the Succession, something happened, and I can't say it to you, which is ridiculous.
Well, but is it a storyline?
Succession lost the best character on the show.
Okay.
And the show got better, in my opinion.
But this happens at the end.
I'm not going to even tell you where it happened. But they went on and made it new and interesting. And I just thought, you know, I know a lot of people would go fucking bananas. But, you know, I do feel like I created a lot of great characters on that show from, you know, Billy Walsh to, you said, you know, Bob, Martin Landau. There were a lot of great characters. You know, there were other great agents, Gary Cole and Andrew Klein and this one and that one. And, you know, I've always said this. Jeremy was, there's no one on earth, maybe Robert Downey Jr., nobody on earth who I would have rather, like, cast as Jeremy. But I feel like, you know, I feel like my words had a good amount to do with it, and it was a good combination. So I just, like, I'm not going to try to imitate Jeremy running around, then I just don't like him doing that. But I just thought, like, what if we the reboot? You're looking at me like, because there was talk. There's been like things, you know, this bubbles percolating, and people say it reboot. But you imagine like Ari wasn't there. I mean, like, and people could go because there.
That would be a tough pill for people to swallow.
Yeah, there's some people who just go, oh, he's the whole show, which is right. It's so obnoxious to me and so annoying to me. You know, like it's frustrating because I'm a very team guy, and really what I think the whole show is, to me, the four guys are the whole show, and then you could bring in other people, but you could never lose the four guys, which is what I said when the movie was happening. The entourage is the guys.
There's a large pocket that would appreciate that and have the sentiment. It's just when it's, I think you hear that the most when it's like entourage is potentially not being overhyped, but yeah. That will cause somebody to say, oh, well, I don't care about that show except for Ari.
Yeah, right? And they like, remember those couple lines, but that's ridiculous.
Right, I mean, right, but that's what I'm saying. But anybody that was a fan of the show appreciates that it was about friendship and how important the four.
So do you think you can carry it without Ari? Like if like Chris Case, my buddy who's a writer, he said, you know, why don't you kill Ari at the beginning of the movie? Like have him like, you know, have him like he's masturbating with a belt around his neck and Ari's found. And
autoerotic asphyxia.
Yeah, I mean, and then the guys have to go on like that.
I think it would be a bad idea. Now, it'd be a bad idea to do it. Now, if he doesn't want to do it, or didn't want to do it, and it was like, "Hey, do you guys want? We could, but I wouldn't think."
What if he wants to do it and he wants to write his own dialogue?
He wants to do it improv style. I mean, I don't know. It's ridiculous. It keeps.
Well, I like
up.
The challenge. I'm at a stage of my life of 55, and I've always said about entrepreneurs, okay, what else can we do with that? I like the idea of the challenge, and I think I could do it.
Here's my only thought creatively, and I'm sure you heard this, but it would be interesting to watch him navigate the new
for sure.
Right, so that alone, you know.
But maybe Jonah navigates it.
Like, obviously, you'd have to have him navigating.
What if Jonah found his body hanging there, and now he has to navigate it after seeing? I'm throwing out ideas. You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
Well, that's the horror movie. If Jonah Gold, I mean, that's pretty
it's
dark,
terrible.
Bro.
Yeah. It's
pretty
dark. Like what happened with Madoff, but you know, and you know, when at the end of season eight. Which we never would have had a movie that I would have been criticized so much about. But, you know, I wanted to kill Vince. That's been no secret. Not because I wanted to kill Adrian, because I wanted to do something that really surprised people. And we had a script, you remember. We did a little reading of it and stuff. And Mark was like, are you crazy? We're going to do movies. We're going to do operas. We're going to do all this stuff. And all we did was one movie that, you know, people...
By the way, the way I'm saying that it would be important to watch Ari Gold navigate through, it would be interesting to watch the three guys try to navigate without Vince.
Oh.
Not saying.
Yeah, yeah. You think Vince is hanging with a belt around his neck?
I would like to have nobody hanging, and if ever there was a world, I think we'd do it together. But that said, you'd still have to figure out the right way to do it. I think we're all on the same page there.
All right, we're all on the same page. But I guess, you know, we're kind of half kidding here. I believe, Kevin.
Yeah, we're kidding.
But this is like, I guess, you know, part of me like gets annoyed like when someone tweets like, do the Ari Gold spinoff and Jeremy likes it. I just don't like it. Like, I'm a team player.
I would not like a tweet that said, let's do an E spinoff. I would immediately scroll past
it. Yeah. Now, listen, if someone offers
I got to throw that a retweet.
If someone offers it to me and you, someone says, hey, here's $10 million each. Let's do the E show. Let's do the E show.
By the way, we're like, hey, we can bring Sloan. Yeah. We can do the E and Sloan romantic.
Watch them like do the Ropers, a Love is Blind type
like
of.
Like the Ropers.
The Ropers. I mean, I can't believe you're throwing out a Ropers reference. I mean, like, there's not one person listening to this podcast that knows what the Ropers are.
Three's Company and the Ropers?
No, but the Ropers was a separate show, a spinoff.
It's a spinoff. That would be E and Sloan.
Which they can carry it on. But
I'm Sloan
but I'm saying, if we got that call, like behind the scenes from HBO, then we'd have to go, fuck, this is a stressful thing. But
I would tell you, get to work. of course, we'd have no choice but to try to figure it out.
But to think about it before anyone does it.
I wouldn't worry about it.
We're a team. This ever happens again. Our crew, which most of them came back for Ramble On, you know, like it was a family thing. I don't know why we want to separate it. And I don't know why we want to denigrate anybody's work. I don't want to do your acting. I don't want you to do my writing. We had great directors, great cinematographers, like everybody do their job. And listen, if you do both, Jerry ended up writing an episode with me, you know, it was actually Jerry's friend that came up with the Tom Brady sucks balls. Was actually Jerry's friend. He called in New York. Said, what would we say? Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's like,
what would we say to Brady if we saw him?
Yeah. Exactly. And right off the bat, I'm so mad I'm blanking on who his friend was. But immediately he goes, you suck balls. And so that was not my line.
There you go.
And that's it. So
let's bring on the man, the myth, the legend.
We're going to go to a break.
We're going to go to a break. And when we come back, Lucas Allen, a.k.a. Jonah Gold. You know, for most of us, learning a second language in high school wasn't exactly a high point of our academic careers. It certainly wasn't a high point for me. 4 years of Spanish, I didn't know anything. And as life would have it, I ended up marrying a Colombian woman who speaks Spanish. And now I wish I paid a little more attention in Spanish class. Now, thanks to Babbel, the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions, there's an addictively fun and easy way to learn a new language. Whether you're traveling abroad, connecting in a deeper way with family, or you just have some free time, Babbel teaches bite-sized language lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. Obviously, that's important for me because half of my family speaks fluent Spanish. Now, Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 100 language experts. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, Spanish, French, Italian, German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Very important. So there's many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, get up to 55% off when you go to babbel.com/victory. That's babbel.com/victory for up to 55% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life.
Welcome back, Victory, the podcast. And we got my son. He played Jonah Gold from seasons 4 through 8 and in the movie. Lucas Allen, what's happening?
Good morning.
What's up,
How's
Luke?
How's it going?
Look how big he is. Look how big and grown up he is. It's crazy.
He's got Scott Kahn set us up with Bamba across the street who teaches jiu-jitsu. Lucas has been going to him. I mean, Bamba's a Brazilian fucking...
My dad's a little scared to go train with him.
Yeah. You do that, Luke. Luke, what's going on?
Not much. Back from school and out here for the summer in L.A.
How old are you, Lucas?
I'm 21.
Jesus Christ.
Is it weird?
21. It is.
You watched
weird.
This whole thing. You saw when he was born.
Yeah, you saw everything. I remember the fire truck, the fire helmet. And again, I don't know. Again, those days it was on film. But we were shooting a scene with season 3, Vince, E, and Carla Gugino at that restaurant. And Lucas was walking around the set with a fire hat, fireman's hat. And then all of a sudden, you just saw you didn't even see his body. You just saw the top of the head cruise through the frame.
he took our best take.
Everybody started laughing. But I said, make sure you guys have that. Save that somewhere. It was before now, you would take a video, right, of it. You know, so.
I'm sure it's somewhere.
A good outtake.
I'm sure HBO's saving it.
We got to find that.
Yeah, so HBO's got in their Hall of Fame somewhere.
Lucas's, did we confirm that about Day Fuckers?
I'm pretty sure it's Day Fuckers.
Lucas's premiere episode, season 4, Day Fuckers.
Does that make me a bad parent?
No, it was the storyline. It was the storyline. We were doing day fucker things and we intro.
It was that's the private school episode, yes. I believe, right?
It has to be that episode, right? Because they're off on their own thing and then Piven has to be having his own
storyline. Yeah. That's what it was. So that's where it came from. Do you remember when's the first time? Because I know we've had some discrepancy. He had a couple kids and then you locked in. So
I don't remember how it changed. I just remember I decided to, which is so weird. We shot the first episode where you see Ari Gold's kids is in front of Lucas's grandparents' house in Beverly Hills, which is across the street from the house we lived in.
Right.
So like, it's so weird looking back at it now because it's almost like it's not Lucas, but these kids are playing in front of his grandparents' house in the show. I think, I don't know if that's the pilot or where, it's not the pilot, but it's soon after. And I have no idea when it switched. I don't even know when Cassidy Lerman comes in.
It probably came in through this storyline, right? Like, all right, now we're going to start really digging into Ari's home life. And that's
really your first episode. Lot to do with
what's
that. What's
your best, what are some of your early memories of understanding that you were going to be doing this? And do you remember what you were
thinking? Well, my first scene was obviously in bed with
Piven.
Ari Gold. Reading a story to me. And all I remember from that, because I was 5 years old, all I remember is sitting there and everybody's like, don't look at the lights. Stop looking at the camera. So, and all I'm doing is that the entire time.
So you were just looking, your eye line was wrong.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I was just a 5 year old kid. Like, right. There's a million people standing around and cameras and lights and everything. So I'm looking around and they're like, stop.
You're a little distracted. I mean, listen, as a youngster myself that started at the similar age, it's a lot of pressure. A lot of pressure. Right. But you were going, you were doing things wrong. You're like, oh, I didn't know. Like, you're like looking up at the lights and all
trying
that
to figure stuff. It out for the first time.
That was a big scene.
What I can tell you is this kid did not feel pressure. He did not want to study the lines. He just almost wanted to wing it, which, you know, Piven will tell you. I mean, his improv was
Piven's best scene partner he had in 8 years on the show.
I mean, he was tough, but he really, and I think I was more nervous on the set than he was. And it was really, I mean, whatever anybody wants to say about a five-year-old acting, I mean, it was really natural, like instantaneously. There weren't a lot of like me, you know, which I've worked with some kid actors where you literally, I've done this with you also, Kevin, but I feed them the lines how I would like it to sound.
Oh, I decided, but Doug and I just got to the point where I said, listen, bro, here's what we'll do. You say it back to me, you say it to me, and I'll say it back to you the exact same way.
But Lucas, I mean, I remember he's like, but I really, really, really want to go to school with Darren Hornig, something like that. Darren Hornig is my friend from high school in Audra, but you know, I didn't have to do any of that. And honestly, that scene, I remember watching it, like, kind of got me emotional. Which is
nuts. What do you mean? So you guys are saying that they improvised it, kind of? Or?
No, it was written, but Lucas, he did a couple of improvs, not in that scene, but no, he just had the natural ability to look at it a couple of times and just
run through it.
That's it. Like, it wasn't like, let's sit here and run this over and over. Like, we weren't driving in the car. Lucas was he was a handful at 5 years old. He didn't want to go to work one day. He's like, I don't want
it. I'm just not feeling it, bro.
And he would ask me for more scenes. And then I write him and then he's like, nah, I don't feel like going. Can't we do it Thursday? I'm like, so what were your recollections of just anything? Were you pressured that you can remember? I mean, can you remember that?
I mean, there was being like so young, I didn't really understand like what I was doing, like how big the show was or that, you know, what any of this was. So coming in, it was like you said, like wasn't really studying for my scenes and stuff like that. So in my head, it wasn't like a big deal. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm just going to go in, say this thing and then walk out. Where like looking back, it's like obviously such a bigger deal than I processed at the time.
Do you think you'll take calls as Jonah Gold? Do you think that's something that's
So you're saying you didn't realize that it was pressure. It was like you were just having a good time. You didn't know that the stakes were high. And you look back like, wow, that was kind of a good role.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, of course. But like coming into it, it's, you know, 5 years old, you don't know like what you're a part of. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
do you remember having a taste for it? Like, you know what? Yeah. That was fun. Well, you said he was asking for more.
Oh, I think for the most part, I always enjoyed. Like once I'm there, you know, I had a lot of fun hanging out with the 80s and stuff. You know, Gary Goldman always got me like a radio and I would mess around on set with everybody.
And I will say this, Piven was great with Lucas, always. Like, he was on his best behavior when Lucas was around and he was always, it was very good to him.
So, we improvised a lot.
Yeah.
Him and I.
Yeah, what'd you improv?
I mean, just like in the scenes, don't you think we improvised a lot?
Right, yeah.
I remember we doing some improv, but I especially remember...
Well, I would think with kids, it would be almost advantageous to a certain point to not pin him, to try to pin him word to word, right?
Yeah, probably. But, I mean, you directed him in an episode. I mean, do you remember that?
Yeah, no, I did. And but at that point, he was like a seasoned veteran. You know, by season 7, he really knew what he was doing. So I would, like, give him a note. I was telling earlier, and he would be like, just kind of nod at me, and I'm like... Try to reiterate it in a different way, thinking maybe he's like, no, I got it. I heard you the first time, you know. But I figure by that point you were 8 or 9 years old and you just had it locked down.
Right.
You just had it locked down. But what do you remember about you remember improvising with Piven? And Piven was good with you?
I remember one scene we were when I'm trying to remember which season it was, but Piven's like, I'm like, are you trying to teach someone how to lie? And then I'm like, how come you fired Uncle Howard? And then we went on like a 2-minute like improv thing after that, and they just let it go with it.
You just kept asking him questions.
Yeah.
Do we have a line where you say, why did you fire Uncle Howard?
Yeah, how could you fire
Uncle
Howard?
That's my brother. I don't remember that. I have no recollection of what that is or why. Do you remember people recognizing you at all? Like, were people saying anything to you?
Yeah, a lot, actually. As I got older, I remember one time when I went to, like, sleepaway camp, and, you know, you have, like, the older counselors and stuff. They're all, like, obsessed with the show because they were, like, you know, 20-year-old kids.
Right.
And so there I am, like, however old I was, 10, 11, and they're like, you're on Entourage, our favorite show. And I'm like, I hadn't seen the show
yet.
It's
like history now. It's very bizarre, isn't it?
That's crazy. So you hadn't seen it. So he wasn't watching the show?
No, yeah.
Or he just didn't care.
Yeah, why don't you watch this anal sex episode?
He could watch his scenes. You show him clips
of
his scenes?
Yeah, of course showed him his scenes.
I saw like clips, but that was it.
We had a party, actually, at the house for this first episode. So we had like all our friends come over, but we just watched like his stuff with the school thing. It's like funny because
you didn't want to show everybody the furries, the other storyline that was unfolding.
String your dick through a hole. What do you say there? What do you say to
string Bugs Bunny's dick through a hole?
Isn't that your line?
I don't think so.
No, it is.
Eli. Really?
Yeah. You go like there. Drama or someone calls you like crazy and you're like, you're helping Bugs Bunny string his dick through a hole and I'm a nut job.
Yeah. I don't think we wanted to show that with the aunts and uncles. Lucas's school friends.
Skip through it.
It's funny because the school story could be, you know, could be on a network television show without any problem. There was nothing, you know, and that was a very real story because, you know, unfortunately Lucas didn't get into the Brentwood school at the time. And I was really pissed about it. That's why I wrote that episode.
Did you have to do any set school or no?
Oh, that was the worst. Yeah. I would show up and I'd be like, yes, like got a day off of school. And then some teacher would show up and be like, oh yeah, every time you're not on camera, we're going to be in the trailer and I'm going to be making you do homework.
I wonder if it's still 15 hours. I think it used to be.
What's 15 hours?
Like you had to log 15 hours of school during the course of a 5-day week. So it would be 3 hours a day. You could bank a little time. But they're hard asses. They'll pull you off the set.
Oh,
so
no.
You
they
did set
they
school
100% would pull me off the set all the time. It was horrible.
Can you imagine?
Did you know that?
Of course. But can you imagine how hard it is for a kid to like have to try to do school and do that?
Do you want to hear something terrible? You know what I used to do?
What?
I read the book, The Shining, like a million times, and I knew it inside and out. So whenever I would go on a new acting job, I'd say, I got to do a book report on The Shining.
Like, this kid's a genius.
This guy really, really, really knows the ins and outs. But no, it's the worst thing. And truthfully, look, it is what it is. And I have to imagine it's gotten a little bit better. But back in the day, like, the school on set thing was a joke.
I used to go hide, like, in his trailer and stuff so they couldn't find me.
Trying to track you down, trying to get you to log some hours. And then it's like, wait a second. So we did 3 hours and you want to do a fourth hour? Why? Well, we could put it in the bank. So tomorrow, if you get it was a nightmare.
Sounds awful.
But it was crystal clear that that was it until he graduated high school.
Yeah, I
or
mean,
until
and
he turned
didn't,
18.
And he didn't push for it. You know, like I actually remember. It's so weird when everything feels so long ago. But I remember when I saw these two kids at the park down from our house, and they were like two like good looking little kids talking about their auditions. And one kid had beat out the other kid, and the other kid was kind of devastated. And I saw the parents, the whole interaction, and honestly,
by the way, that's dark.
It made me really sad. And then, you know, his mother and I, discussed it and were like, he's definitely not acting. But also he didn't, because, you know, like you pushed.
Well, you
got to
have the bug,
yeah,
right?
Like he was never.
Well, at one point I wanted to, but I remember you guys shut that down real quick.
I mean, I said to you, you want to do it? Do it at school. Like, go do the plays, go do all that stuff. And I told you, like, David Schwimmer was, you know, a theater actor as a kid and really started to play. And again, we'll never know what works or not. We'll never know whether Connelly is fucked up because he was famous as a youngster.
I can tell you that it will never happen with my daughter.
Right.
If that says anything.
Yeah.
Not until she's 18. And like you said, and if I see the appropriate steps along the way, acting class, drama, or real interest in it, but to watch what some of these kids, it's crazy. I still get calls from friends of mine back home that will be like, oh, you know, my, that I grew up with, oh, my daughter is so beautiful. She wants to be an actress. I'm like, I'd like to be an actor. I want to be an actor too. Like, what do you mean? Like, what, get your daughter a job? I can't get myself a job.
Well, it's hard too with kids just growing up on a set and stuff. They don't, you know, if you don't have a life outside of that, you don't have any perception of like how the real world works and how.
But now it's so weird. Now, I mean, you know, Lucas has, we have, you know, mutual friends whose kids are like, you know, a million followers on Instagram, which, you know,
that's a whole nother.
I don't even know what their talents are, and they do it. And you can't, you know, every generation we go, oh, this one is so fucked because what's happening, you know, they said it about us, and you know, they said it about before that, rock and roll and then rap and whatever, but so you can't really stop the times from changing, and you have to try to,
if your kid's got a knack for being an influencer, then let them roll with it.
I'm just saying, I don't know, the adult has to be a good guidance, and hopefully you can keep your kid in check. But I can't imagine, and you know, people are different, just like actors that we see. You can be famous and you can still have your feet on the ground, or you could be one of those guys. And I don't know that fame necessarily changes them. I don't know. We'll never know, I guess. But some people are just assholes to start with, you know? And I think, though, it would be really hard, though, to be a famous 7-year-old kid walking around getting treated differently than other 7-year-olds. I don't know.
I mean, listen, there's been obviously a million horror stories, but like, you know, a guy like Macaulay Culkin seems to have really landed on his feet. And like,
there's a lot of people. Ron Howard was a child. I mean, there's a lot.
There's a lot. But there's also a lot that, you know, obviously it just doesn't go.
It's also so much more attention.
But as a kid, too, and when that's happening, like, I'm sure a lot of people, it goes straight to their head and they're like, I'm on the top of the world. And when you start there and then you grow up and you realize how the world works, you know, it's a rude awakening.
Yeah. And
how
also
smart is this kid?
Yeah. He's very smart, but also it's hopefully the parenting has some influence on it. Cause you can't shelter the kids forever. But I guess the point is like where Lucas, I didn't want him to be some famous 7-year-old. Nowadays, They could get
nowadays,
on Instagram and all of a sudden
promote the podcast. Let's get them going on the IG.
Exactly. Start working that IG. But
that's interesting, though. Yeah, you're right. I mean, I guess that would be a thing with social media. Although it is different because it's a complete lifestyle change. You know.
But you also see the same thing, though.
Did anybody reach out about representation?
Yeah. They reached out representation and to audition for a show that they didn't say it was just a blind audition. They said we like him. He's not guaranteed anything.
Right,
but if he gets it, he's moving. And I don't remember where it was, but it was definitely like a plane ride somewhere.
Vancouver.
He was moving.
Going to Vancouver for 6 months.
I'm like, what are you, out of your mind? And you know, again, part of you feels like, what are you supposed to do? Like, and if you have someone, if you have a Taylor Swift and she's your daughter at 7 years old performing and you're like, what the fuck? What is this? What are you supposed to shutter? I don't know.
That's what I'm saying. There are exceptions. There have to be.
Yeah.
Right?
And also, though, you also have, like you said,
thank God they let Taylor Swift sing.
But you also said you have a lot of parents who are calling you.
Right.
And that's the thing that, like, you know, Lucas was a very fucking pretty baby. And everyone was like, you should have him. Why should I have him model? So I make money for his college fund? Or so I feel like I can walk around and tell people I have a son who's in a baby commercial that he didn't choose to be in or ask in. And that's why for the show, it was, we had a long discussion. He didn't really hold up his end of the bargain, similar to how he didn't hold up his end of the bargain to feeding and walking Boris when I adopted him. But
I remember Boris.
This is the only Boris guy in America going. That makes deals with a six-year-old and he expects them
what
to
was
hold,
the deal?
Boris
hold
is still going, by the way.
What?
Oh, yeah. He wears diapers around the house now. But when we adopted him at Roxbury Park and we already had three dogs, Lucas is like, I want him. I said, Lucas? And he wasn't six. He was at least 10.
8, 9.
Yeah, I said you have to walk him and feed him every day, and that lasted about 48 hours. Yeah, it lasted about 48 hours. And then what do you do? You give away the dog?
Well, what are you going to sue him?
Yeah,
I mean, he broke the deal.
You didn't feed this dog. I'm letting him out on the street to fend for himself. So, but with the acting thing, I said you have to take this seriously if you want to do it. You have to remember there are a bunch of people who feed their families with this and do this. So he was great on set. Getting to set sometimes was pretty awful.
Do you remember any part of that conversation, Luke? Because that makes sense. You're like, listen, don't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
If you don't want to do it. But yeah. If you're going to do it, remember, this is a real thing, and a bunch of people count on this, and there's somebody that would love to do it. So it's your call.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, what would it have mattered? You know, it's great that he did it, but at the end of the day.
No, for me, it was really about, for me, it was a cool thing.
Right.
It's like, you know, I mean, Ari's wife was named Melissa after his mother.
It's a great record.
I cast someone who looked like his mother and him playing the son. It just, it all.
Well, that's what's so crazy. The entire, Ari's entire family life is based off of art.
Of course.
Right? I don't know.
Like in some,
Boris wasn't in there.
That's some unparalleled in somewhere in his brain. Yeah, of course.
And a lot of the characters are based off of Marvin, the accountant, based off of my grandfather.
You've met a lot of these. You know, Andrew Left and
I mean, he knows all
Brian
the characters.
Cher, and all these guys, right?
You know, but you know, they say write what you know, and maybe that's it. That's all I knew. So I'm a rap. But
did you find yourself at the computer going like, maybe I'm throwing too much at him here?
No. He honestly was so good, and Jeremy will tell you that too. Like, that's why
Jeremy probably won't talk to us after this, but go ahead.
that's fine. I don't care. But you know, Lucas, it's not that I would ever want him to be an actor, let's say. And again, it's more about the fame thing than the actor. Like I would love it if he was like a Broadway, like amazing Broadway actor, though. Like, there are guys actually, you know, when I saw Piven, it's incredible that I don't even know the guy's name. Incredible. Because when I saw Piven in that David Mamet play, which I forget even which play it was, the co-star was it. I mean, the guy was amazing. And I was like, actually, I thought about, I wonder if we could find a role for him. But as far as I know, he's never been like a huge name actor, but he's a phenomenal actor who makes a great living acting. So it's not about the acting that I think acting profession is beneath.
No, you're saying, well, that's the fear in a parent and for the kid. It's not the actual art of standing there and comprehending what scene you're doing. It's the being famous thing.
It's everything
and
that comes
thinking
along
that with. You're better and you put on a pedestal. All that kind of stuff.
I don't think I could do theater.
Yeah, it's hard.
It's a very different type of, I mean, for us and you know, being in front of a camera, you get a million takes if you need it.
Right.
There, you're in front of a room full of people. If you fuck up, that's it.
Yeah.
I have zero desire.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, that's why I say, like, David Schwimmer is a highly trained actor. I mean, like, a lot of actors in this business, which is what I said to Lucas, if you really want to do it, take it seriously as going to medical school. Like, really train, really study, and really, you know your
it's
work.
The only way to do it.
You know? And look, I went...
But that's a hard reality for a little kid to under... Like, looking back, and like, as an adult now, you can... Commitment means something, but then you're like, one day you're like, yeah, and the next day you're not. And that's, you have to have respect for a lot of these kids, like the kids in Stranger Things and stuff who are, you know, working their ass off.
I think you have to. My parenting feeling was, and we'll find out, you're 21 now, things are pretty good, but you know, we'll find out what was right and what you can control or not. But my feeling was, you don't push things on your kid. Like, there are tennis. I have friends whose kids are superstar athletes. Brian Burns has a son who I actually haven't checked up on how good this kid is, but this kid was such a goddamn good baseball player at 6 that he wasn't allowed to play with like 9-year-olds. He had to play with older. And Brian said every morning he woke up, this kid woke him up with a mitt and a ball in his hand and said, let's go. So some people, they have that thing, whatever it is.
Like, in fact, my parents did close the door on a lot. Like, I would only do TV commercials because it was only one-offs. Right. So I never read for TV shows when I was a little kid, one or two. I would only read for movies or stuff where I was coming home that night.
Right.
And furthermore, I was going on so many auditions. They're like, oh, wait. So wait, on the day when he doesn't have an audition, you want us to go to an acting class? No.
Yeah.
He's got to be a regular kid.
Yeah.
So all the mistakes that I made career-wise as a young actor were from my parents going, this can't be your whole life.
Yeah.
Go play hockey. Go do whatever it is that you do. Yeah. I'm happy to welcome an amazing new sponsor to the show, and I'm talking about Sheath Underwear. Have you or your friends had trouble finding comfortable underwear? Underwear that is focused on your comfort with no chafing, no sticking, no drama, and designed so that everything fits exactly where it should. And you know what I'm talking about. If yes, then you have to try Sheath Underwear. It all starts with Sheath's dual pouch system, a concept that was developed by the company's founder after enduring a summer in Iraq, day after day of triple-digit heat and unbearable chafing and discomfort. Founder and CEO Robert Patton felt there had to be a better way, and now there is. When I first saw it, I thought, this is genius. My friends tell me all you have to do is put them on and gravity handles the rest. The dual pouch comfortably cradles you just like a hammock for the family jewels. And don't forget to check out our newest additions, the Bamboo 5 and the Mesh Boxer Brief. Added comfort, added performance, added mobility. You know what? I like to wear Sheath underwear at my roller hockey games. It keeps me cool for three periods of men's roller hockey on Wednesday night. It's a whole new world of comfort and performance. The Sheath underwear is all about supporting shows like ours and supporting free speech. So make sure to give Sheath underwear a try. Go to SheathUnderwear.com now and use the promo code VICTORY to receive 20% off today. That is very important. That's SheathUnderwear.com today and use the promo code VICTORY for 20% off.
Again, like I said, I don't know what the right answer is because, you know, obviously, like, people like Andre Agassi, like, has written books about how much his parents pushed him and how it made him at some point hate tennis. But at the end of the day, he became champion of the world. He's made hundreds of millions of dollars and his whole life is set. I don't know what the answer is, but the best case scenario is if you end up with a Taylor Swift nothing more in life than to sing and is writing songs when she's six. You don't have to do much.
It's a great thing to really consider because I'm sitting up here on my high horse, right? Talk about how my daughter will never be anywhere near it. Listen, if she can sing like Taylor T. Swift, that's another conversation. Yeah. If she can get up there like that, I mean, if it's undeniable.
Well, but I'm not saying that if they're good or bad is how you get, they're passionate about something, like it's because acting is such a potentially non-skilled profession, just like writing. You could just walk out, write something, you've never done anything and people love it and that's it. But I do believe the more you work at it, the better you get, just like tennis, basketball or anything else. So I just think, you know, my kids will grow up as they will, but my feeling was always like, if they have a passion, then they have to show me that they're really passionate about it. So if Lucas was calling me up every day, I want to go to acting class. I want to do this. I just watched this movie. This kid was this, but he didn't have that. That wasn't
wasn't where his interest was. Yeah. Right, Luke, so let's hear what your thoughts on that are.
I had obviously the interest with the fire department at the time and moving on into law enforcement and things like that. And so that was kind of where my focus was.
But you never felt like party was like, oh man, I wish I would have. You were locked in on the fire department and law enforcement.
At the time, yes.
Right.
Looking back, yes. Like, I think like I should have pushed more in that opportunity.
Or explored it a little bit?
Yeah.
But I don't think that's the way to look at it. That's what I'm saying. It's like either you have that built-in passion or not. Like really.
Because he's looking at it now for the wrong reasons. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Now you're like, I could be could be with some of Leo's girls. You know? But I mean, it's like my passion growing up was sports. I was obsessed with sports. Now, unfortunately, by the way, what a waste of fucking time.
Yes.
What did it do for my future life? Like, I wish I was focused on writing and learning how to make movies. I had friends, you know, my friend Greg Vance, he was making movies when we were in sixth grade. And I was like, what are you doing? I wish I was doing that.
But again, as a kid, you don't know what you like. You know, I'm experiencing the acting stuff, which I enjoyed for the most part, even though sometimes you said I caused some problems as a kid. But
I think off the set, which doesn't count. You're supposed to act up in the car. It's not on set. Right.
But then there's that other side with where my other interests are that I had very little exposure to that I wanted to kind of see what I was missing out on that side. Obviously, my grandfather, police officer, saw how much fun he was having all the time, and I was interested and intrigued and wanted to explore that as well.
But that's why I say my philosophy is let your kids find their passions. Show them lots of things, show them lots of options and see what they get, you know? Like I got, you know, my mother, you know, got me piano lessons, and I fucking love the piano, and I just never took it seriously, and I never got good. I got my kids a piano. They never really loved it and never took it seriously. So I have friends who, the second they gave their kid a piano, that's all the kid wanted to do. He didn't want to leave the house. So, you know, I think you find what your interests are, and you try to help your kids have explore options. And if they find something that they're passionate about, help them get to that. So anyway, I don't know how we turn into parenting.
Well, no, because it's interesting. So, you know, we always say this, but the amount of work and the footprint that a show like Entourage that went as long as it did and required as much work, you're like in and on the ground floor on multiple levels, right?
Yeah.
Your dad is away. He's doing his thing. You're now acting in it. So you are aware of the complete footprint that this has had, that it's had on your life. At what point, but you were so young, how old were you when you realized, like, holy shit, man, like, we're small part of history there. And that was kind of, you lived it in real time. When did the reflection point happen where you're like, wow, that's pretty cool?
I mean, I always knew I was like a part of something big, but I didn't start watching the show till long after it had ended, right?
Right.
So it didn't really sink in fully until after I'd watched the show and been like, wow, like, that was amazing. Like, I see what everybody's been talking about for the last 10 years.
And how old are you there? 16, 17?
Probably, yeah, 16.
16, 17.
Yeah.
So you ripped through the show. And then when you go to college, so where do you go? You go to college where?
University of Arizona.
You go to University of Arizona. And they're watching it there? Like, what's that like?
It's, everybody loves the show. I mean, it's, all my friends talk about it. I can't go anywhere without them referencing it.
Right.
What was your pledge name?
Entourage. And, well, they also called me, it was a mix between Turtle and Entourage.
Cause I was thought they were the assistant. Lloyd.
They, oh yeah. Well, they also called me Lloyd, but. Right.
So, oh, that's what the kind of thing, what they do with the new guys. You gotta be some kind of,
they give you like a nickname. And right. So I was Turtle a little bit. Then Lloyd really stuck because I was like the assistant to the pledge master. So.
Never E, huh?
And yeah.
Never E.
and where do they watch it these days? So like, if you're in a, if the guys are trying to kill some time, is it at the fraternity house or is it, you throw it on, or are people watching it on their laptops? Where are they consuming the show? Like in college?
Everywhere. People are watching it everywhere. I'm at their apartments, at the house. They're people that aren't watching it, they're trying to get them to watch it. It's, yeah, people really love the show, which is pretty, it's great to see.
And is it, well, and now as an adult at 21, is it strange? Yeah, not gonna say that you're like a celebrity, but it's like, shit, man, you don't know, that's him. That's, you know,
yeah.
I mean, if you're a fan of the show, you're gonna be a fan of yours. I think, right?
It's weird because they're like, what's your favorite show? And I'll say, you know, Entourage is right. One of my favorite shows, and you're biased, you can't say that. I'm like, well, it is. It's one I've watched it like 15 times.
Tell them that
times.
Show I mean, put you through college. You can be biased all you want.
Well, you can make a case for it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing is that black and white, but
right.
It's not like a ridiculous thing. It's not like you're saying, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. But yeah, that's it. Any further? I mean, I just think it's really interesting because I watched him grow up on the set. Now to see him here in Arizona and kids at college, you know, it's a unique thing that you got it from both sides.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you were just the actor on the show, it would be one thing, but you got it both because it was also your dad and, you know, major footprint on the family. So I'm curious how you feel about it now. It'll be interesting to see what he thinks in a few years.
Being on set,
what the
was
future
fun.
Holds, yeah.
It was fun being on set. I had a lot of good times.
Right.
How was Conley as the director? Do you remember?
He was so young.
It's hard to remember, but I do remember being, I would hang out with Gary Goldman a lot.
Gary Goldman's here. Yeah. You see him back there, right?
Yeah. Gary Goldman loves young children.
He always does love young. He always has young love.
No, man. He would let me call action and cut and.
Yeah. Right. And Mark Christie, our
I would hang out with Mark Christie a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a lot of fun on set doing a lot of different things. And
yeah, you came to set to visit. You didn't even have to hang with your dad.
Yeah, well, I was on set. I was on set a lot, even when I wasn't acting, just hanging out with everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You were on the Ramble on set too.
I'll have to find something
if this show ever goes.
I should be the agent on the show. Grow up.
Look at him making a play.
Like that.
You taking classes? You in theater? Doing a play at University of Arizona? Anything?
See any interesting movies lately, Lucas?
I gotta read for it.
Yeah, you.
Oh yes, you do. Yes,
be
you
great.
Do.
Lucas and Connolly competing for a role would be awesome. Since Connolly still looks 20 to me, but Gary, well, you got anything to add? You have any memories?
Gary, any Lucas Ellen anecdotes? Gary, I'm sorry. Put the microphone a little closer to you. Yeah. Well, he's six. Yeah. He's six. You had to bribe him. Yeah.
By the
sometimes
way,
you gotta finish.
By the way, Gary and I are on such a like healthy food.
Lucas,
kick.
I'm with you, bro. I don't like the thought of thinking
that we were probably like, here, you can have 20 more M&Ms if you do this fucking scene. And now I'm like, there's no way I'm giving my daughter two cakes.
Hit the Tootsie Rolls till you're full. If you can give me two more takes.
And you know what? Gary's daughters were in the Entourage movie with Maya. They had a little scene. So nice. did they talk? Didn't they?
Did they read?
They didn't read. They skipped the reading.
At that
did
point.
They? Were they lines? Yeah. Yeah. No, that was nepotism. They were nepo babies.
They were nepo babies.
Maya had a scene with Reese too.
Yeah, Maya had a scene with Reese.
Oh, what was that? Which one?
What do you mean? She said, "What it says she wouldn't curse, but all she
Daddy
does is curse
says them. We can't afford maple syrup."
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted her to say we have no fucking maple syrup, and on the set, you know, imagine that my little cute daughter who now curses, and I go, "Could you please stop?" And we really tried not to curse in our house, but I said, "So Maya, you're gonna curse here." She's like, I mean, she starts blushing, and then like I'm on the set, like I'd probably be canceled today. I'm like, Maya, you gotta say fucking maple syrup. And she's like, I'm not saying it. Do you remember that, Gary? Were you there? She was like, I'm not saying it. I'm sitting there, I'm like, just say
one fucking maple syrup.
It's so
you want any future in this business?
It's so weird watching the show too, because I can like it's like him talking with other people's mouths, which is like so funny because, right. I mean, it makes me laugh even more because I'm like literally picturing him say it, but it's coming out of Ari's mouth.
100%.
Yeah. Maybe I should have read again for it. I should have had you coach me. We weren't friends.
You should read for Ari Gold in the reboot. All right.
Can you imagine the comments Gold. We're going to get after that one? All right. To everybody, again, we'll say it to all of you. Please follow the Action Park Media
YouTube
page. Watch the Victory Podcast. Give good comments on Apple. Did you see another person like, talking about how we're not consistent? I mean, what
are
you talking about?
We're consistent. We're battling through the dog days of summer.
We work for free. Yeah. We're not, man, like, fuck, God. Gary Goldman's here for free. He doesn't even get to talk. I mean, like, what is wrong with people?
What is happening?
Like, we have nothing else to do. I mean, like, you know, but we're trying our best. And if we're entertaining, great. And if we're not, you don't have to listen.
Well,
like,
they should listen. We're good.
We're excellent.
We'll get Dylan next week. We're going to get into the can finale. And we got to do something special. We got to get
something. Also, Adrian was texting you before the show. What
happened? He wanted his footage from his from the Grenier Outdoor podcast.
So you don't know when he's going to air that, though?
I don't know.
And I did not hear back from Sasha Gray yet. Very upsetting.
We got a couple good ones coming up because we then have the season 5, episode 1, which is Mexico and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But we got to figure out who do we want for the can episode. Think about it. All right. Victory the podcast.
I got another partner that's calm and plain. He goes by the name of the Big Daddy Kane. The mellow type of fellow that's laid back. Back in the days, he was nothing.